Got a very smart pastor there. The scripture lesson this morning is going to come from the Gospel of Matthew. And in the 13th chapter, so those of you that are brilliant Bible scholars, is that Old Testament or New? Okay, just want to make sure we're together on this. Matthew 13, beginning with verse 24, and then I'm going to go to verse 30, and then I'm going to skip over a little bit and go down, starting back up in verse 36 to 43. And Jesus told them another parable. The kingdom of heaven, he said, is like a man who sowed good seed in his field. But while everyone was sleeping, his enemy came, and he sowed weeds among the wheat, and he went away. Now when the wheat sprouted and formed heads, then the weeds also appeared. The owner's servants came to him, and he said, "Sir, didn't you sow good seed in your field? Where then did these weeds come from?" "An enemy did this," he replied. Well, the servants asked him, "Well, do you want us to go and pull them up?" "No," he answered, "because while you are pulling the weeds, you may root up the head with them. Let both of them grow together until the harvest. And at that time, I'll tell the harvesters, 'First, I want you to collect the weeds and tie them in bundles to be burned, and then gather the wheat and bring it into the barn.'" So he left the crowd and he went into the house. And his disciples came to him and he said, "Would you explain to us the parable of the weeds in the field?" And he answered, "Sure. The one who sowed the good seed is the Son of Man. The field is the world, and the good seed stands for the sons of the kingdom. The weeds are the sons of the evil one. And the enemy who sows them is the devil. The harvest is the end of the age, and the harvesters are angels. Now, as the weeds are pulled up and burned in the fire, so it will be at the end of the age. The Son of Man will send out his angels, and they will weed out of his kingdom everything that causes sin and all who do evil. They will throw them into the fiery furnace, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Then the righteous will shine like the sun in the kingdom of their Father." He who has ears to hear, let him hear. The word of the Lord. Well, I am very grateful to be here amongst you today. I come really in a couple different capacities. One of them is obviously coming to represent part of the presbytery in the installation, and I'm grateful to be able to do that. I serve our presbytery as the chaplain for the presbytery, which means I get to go around and hang out with all the different pastors and just check on them and make sure that they're doing well, that their soul is healthy enough to carry on the work that God has given them to do. Another capacity that I have is I serve in a ministry up in Kansas City called Rhythm of Grace. And it's Rhythm of Grace, actually, the other thing that I want to say thank you to you all, because you all have been supporters of Rhythm of Grace for the last several years as part of your missions giving. And we go about working with not only pastors, but lay folks all over the Midwest as far, and actually the country and really most of the world as well, traveling to take care of pastors and folks who are serving the Lord in a variety of different capacities. And so we want to thank you for your generosity and your faithfulness to help us do that ministry as well. It's not very often that, Drew, someone gets an opportunity to have a sermon crafted just for them. But that's what this is. This is just for you. The rest of you, you have the option. You can go home now, or you can just listen in and eavesdrop. Some of it might actually apply. We'll see. That'll be up to you. But I want to say that, you know, as I made my way down here, I usually like to try to find a place to put this. How about right there? Make my way down here. You know, there's one thing that there is abundance of between Kansas City and Ottawa. Dirt. A lot of dirt. And I am one who absolutely loves dirt. I know it's weird, but I think it started back when I was a little kid, obviously, playing in dirt. I had a grandfather who was a farmer, and my parents had great wisdom when I was of the probably those ages when they probably needed some little extra help with their rambunctious son, and they took me to the farm, and they shoved me out on the farm for several summers, and there I got to ride a good old Ford N8 tractor and mow field all day long, feed hogs, feed cattle, and in my spare time, play in the dirt. And as I've grown up to be something of an adult, I still have a great fond affection for dirt. I love getting muddy and dirty. Just ask my wife. She still rolls her eyes when I come in from just mowing the lawn. She's like, how could you get that dirty? It's just part of who I am. I love dirt. When I attempt to grow anything in our little backyard garden, it's hardly worth noticing. It's horrible. But the one thing that I can grow is my compost pile. It is awesome. I've got worms as big and thick as, you know, my pinky. It's a great, you ought to come by, see my compost pile. I can't show you any other produce because it really doesn't grow much, but dirt I can grow. And I knew years ago, you know, that I had this strange affection for dirt. And I would read stories about farmers. I would read stories about farming. And then one day I had a mentor of mine, Eugene Peterson, who introduced me to a farmer by the name of Wendell Berry. And Wendell Berry writes about farming because he's a farmer. And as he writes about farming, he has some interesting insights about what a farmer's job is all about. He says this: the farmer has basically three jobs. A farmer's primary job, basically, is to produce good soil. That's it. The farmer's job is to produce good soil. Raising crops, raising cattle, or any other livestock, that's secondary to raising or to producing good soil. The livestock, the crops, they help in the process, but they're merely the means to the end of good soil. So the second thing about a farmer's job, besides that, is he says a farmer's job is to know the soil. He needs to know what crops went in where, when you rotated crops, when you left crops to go fallow. You took that great step of faith and plant nothing. And just let the weeds grow up. Let things that grow wild grow up. The farmer needs to know when and how to move things around like that. The third thing he said a farmer's job is to be able to walk his farm. It's got to be small enough so that you can actually walk the fence row and see exactly how the fences are holding up. To be able to look at your outbuildings and check their conditions. To look at the pond depth. To look at the general look of your field and crops as you as they grow. Those are the things that a farmer does. Those are the things that my grandfather modeled for me, but I didn't get it until I actually heard somebody talk about it. But this is what a farmer does. And that brings us to our passage today about a parable regarding a farmer. Now remember, a parable is a story. It's a story that, according to the language of parable, with a prefix being alongside, or in the Greek it means to throw down alongside. It's a story that's thrown down alongside truth. The parables, they don't explain the truth. They're not intended to explain the truth. They're only intended to create a picture for you in your mind. They create a picture, they create images that your imagination might be able to then grab hold of and see it in your mind's eye. And as you lock into that, those parables then begin to work in a very subversive fashion. They begin to create images for you that you maybe not think about when you first just heard the story. So Jesus tells this parable in verses 24 to 30 about a farmer who goes out and he sows the seed, and then his enemy comes along and he sows some weeds, and they both grow up together. The farmhands, you know, come and say, "Hey, I thought you put good soil. I thought you put good seed in the soil." And he said, "I did. It's my enemy that came and did this. What do you want us to go and rip them all up and weed out your garden, weed out your field? Now, let it go. Let the weeds and the wheat grow together. And in the end, when they're ripe, I'll have the harvesters remove the weeds and then the wheat." So he tells the story, and like most of us, the disciples would really like to have a further explanation about that story, because you know what? That just doesn't make sense. At first reading, that just is not computing. And so, whether their imaginations were just a little too weak, or maybe there was just not enough time to sit with that story, and reflect on it, to contemplate it, maybe they were just too busy. So they ask him, "Explain this to us. What did you mean when you said this story?" And so Jesus gives them a pretty straight-up explanation in verses 36 to 43 of what's what and who's who. He says, and the simple and obvious truth about this whole story is that there is the coexistence of good and evil people. You kind of immediately get that. You understand, okay, good crop, bad weeds. Good people, bad people. They function so closely in our culture and in our world that you really can't, they can't be uprooted without endangering the others. You know, we've created a little thing in our culture called too big to fail. You know that one? We've paid the price for that. But that's kind of what this is about, is that there is this thing that's so intermingled with good and evil that you can't really yank out the evil like you want to without destroying the good. The roots are too intertangled together. And it is that the good and the evil, they draw life from the same soil. They both draw the nutrients and all that it needs to exist from the same place. They're in some kind of mutually sustaining relationship. Now, the part of the story that we like the best is the end. That's where the good guys win, you know? And we, of course, are the good guys, right? Naturally. And the bad guys, they're going to have that devastating and terrible end, of course, which they fully deserve. Now, if that were the end of the story, we'd think, okay, fine enough. But then Jesus adds this one little final caveat that oftentimes we miss and we blow right past it. He who has ears to hear, let him hear. Let him listen. Let her pay attention. We pass over it because we know Everybody's got ears. What's the point here, Jesus? Whenever you run across that little phrase, and Jesus uses it a lot, know this, that's Jesus' code language for there's more to this than you understand. There's more to this story than you think you know. And therefore, it causes us to have to move into spaces to ponder. You can yank down more books off the bookshelf, and you can look up nice, you know, Bible words and find root meanings of words and cross-referencing. You can do your study if you want, but that's not what Jesus is asking you to do. Sit with it. Imagine it. Look at it over and over again. What are you talking about, Jesus? Good soil, good harvest, weeds, intermingling roots. What is that? Well, remember the context of all of this is the kingdom of heaven. He was telling them a story about what the kingdom of heaven is like. And for all that we know about what the kingdom of heaven is, we do know this, that it is God's inbreaking. It is when God breaks in to the ways of this world and exudes his power and his authority. Now, that can look a lot of different ways. Power and authority can look like revival. Power and authority can look like signs and wonders. Power and authority can look all different kinds of ways. But through whatever the manifestation is for the kingdom, for this power and authority inbreaking into our world, it is this, that love has come. Love has broken through. The kingdom of heaven is always about love. And so Jesus is saying here, this is a story now about love, God's love, breaking in upon us. The weeds in the story that make the story believable to Jesus' day was undoubtedly what they called in that part of the country, darnel. Darnel was, in fact, a weed that looked just like wheat. And in the early stages of its growth, as it first came up, it was actually called black wheat. And only when the heads of that wheat began to emerge could you tell the difference. And at that point, it was too late, as the roots of the two plants would intermingle. And so pulling up the weed would literally pull up the wheat. They knew that. That part wasn't new news to them. They experienced that all the time. But how is that like the kingdom? I think the subversive part of this parable becomes at least clear to me in two ways. As I've sat with it, as I've pondered it, looked around, did my study, but I sat with this thing and I look around on it, I see two different things that pop up to me. One is, this is not just a story about the world that we live in. It's really about every individual who lives in the world, saved and unsaved. Every one of us, you and me. And it's also about the kingdom of heaven using weeds among the wheat to produce love. What? Yeah. God uses weeds among the wheat for the inbreaking of his kingdom. Take somebody to roll around the dirt to figure this one out. Recall this, that the good seed was sown first. In God creating, he made you and I in his image. And the great part of what that means is we've got the DNA of God within us. Within every human being that God creates, there's a part of God in them. The DNA of God, the love. Every human being knows and has the capacity to love. That's just God. Now, when we come to Christ, the Spirit of God impacts that ability to love in order to learn how to love the way Christ loves. And that's what it is to become Christ-like, is that we learn how to love the way Jesus loved, and we are empowered to do that. But every one of us carries the DNA of love within us. The enemy, identified here as the devil, sows the bad seed. The bad seed looks like good seed. It looks like the good stuff. That's why it's called a deception. Every deceptive thing the enemy ever does has a little smidgen of truth in it to make it look good. That's called deceiving you. Otherwise, you wouldn't buy it. It functions, this bad seed functions as our sin nature, and it emerges through all of the crazy, neurotic choices of how we love selfishly. And we're all pretty good at that. We know how to love selfishly. In other words, I know how to love if I know I'm getting something in return, right? I mean, even as a person who comes to Jesus, we kind of immediately say, oh, Lord, I love you. Of course I'll follow you. I am getting something in return, right? I am getting heaven, right? There's something on the other side of this for me. I stood at the altar and I professed my love to my wife. I will love you to the day I die. As long as I know you're going to love me back, right? You're going to love me back? I'm getting something out of this? We love that way. That's how we know how to love. That's not necessarily Christ-like love. Christ-like love is to love without any sense of reciprocity, without getting anything in return, no guarantees of the payback. That's what we grow into. But this darnel, this weed in our life, is all of our neurotic abilities to love selfishly. And you know, the Apostle Paul so wonderfully describes this battle between us, inside of us, as he describes for us the conflict in his own life. And he writes it out for us in Romans chapter 7. I'm going to read this to you and see if you don't identify with how Paul is struggling with the weed and the wheat that's growing up within him. I'm going to read it to you out of the Message translation. He says this, I can anticipate the response that's coming. I know that all God's commands are spiritual, but I am not. Isn't this also your experience? Yes, I'm full of myself. After all, I've spent a long time in sin's prison. What I don't understand about myself is that I decide one way, but then act another, doing things I absolutely despise. So if I can't be trusted to figure out what is best for myself and then do it, well, it becomes obvious that God's command is necessary. But I need something more. For if I know that the law, but I can't keep it, and the power of sin within me keeps sabotaging my best intentions, I obviously need help. I realize that I don't have what it takes. I can will it, but I can't do it. I decide to do good, but I don't really do it. I decide not to do bad, but then I do it anyway. My decisions, such as they are, don't result in actions. Something has gone wrong deep within me, and it gets the better of me every time. It happens so regularly that it's predictable. The moment I decide to do good, sin is there to trip me up. I truly delight in God's commands. But it's pretty obvious that not all of me joins in that delight. Parts of me covertly rebel. And just when I least expect it, they take charge. Oh, I've tried everything and nothing helps. I'm at the end of my rope. Is there no one who can do anything for me? Isn't that the real question? The answer? Thank God it is that it's Jesus Christ can and does. He acted to set things right in this life of contradictions, where I want to serve God with all of my heart and mind, but I'm pulled by the influence of sin to do something totally different. I hope you caught Paul's conflict that he had. I hope you saw the weeds and the wheat within his life that he recognized was there. You know, as Paul does this, fortunately he comes to that conclusion in that next chapter, that in all things, in everything, the weeds of our lives included, God is working a good for those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. And that purpose that you've been called to is to grow the DNA of God's love within you. Paul's vulnerability, I think, gives us a good example in 2 Corinthians as he talks about what that weed and the value of that weed might be, or any of the weeds in our life. He's just been talking about some great revelations that he's received from God. And then he says this, 2 Corinthians 12, 7 to 10. Because of these extravagant revelations, so I wouldn't get a big head, I was also given the gift of a handicap. Insert weed. To keep me constant in touch with my limitations. Satan's angels did his best to get me down. What he did, in fact, was push me to my knees. No danger, then, of walking around high and mighty. At first, I didn't think of it as a gift, and I begged God to remove it. 3 times I did that, and then he told me, no, my grace is sufficient. It's enough. It's all you need. My strength comes into its own in your weakness. Weeds. Once I heard that, I was glad to let it happen. I quit focusing on the handicap or the weeds, and I began appreciating the gift. It was a case of Christ's strength moving in on my weakness. Now, I take limitations in stride and with good cheer. For these limitations, these weeds that cut me down to size, abuse, accidents, opposition, bad breaks, I just let Christ take over. And so the weaker I get, the stronger I become. The weeds made Paul see the wheat. It made Paul see that you don't pull up the weeds. Otherwise, you're not going to have the power of Christ in you. There's something about the limitations of our lives that drive us to our knees, that we might then appropriate God's grace, his empowering presence to us. It produced something in Paul: humility, trust, faith in God's ability. Paul could see it, not through his physical eyes, but through his spiritual eyes. He took time to meditate on it, reflect on it, to turn it over. Then he could see it. It seems that there is a value in weeds in our lives if we have ears to hear and eyes to see. We can understand how the weeds help produce humility and trust in our own lives. And if we fail to see this happening, then the weeds will surely choke the wheat. Our selfishness will uproot God's love in us. So, Drew, this point's for you. How do we do this? How do we learn to hear and see the kingdom of heaven at work? How are you going to see that in yourself and in this congregation. Remember, there's three things that a farmer does. And one of the things that I learned from my mentor, Eugene Peterson, about Wendell Berry and those three things is he said, translate. If you would insert the word church where he writes farm, and you would insert pastor where he writes farmer, and soul where he writes soil, you're going to learn how to pastor by looking at a farmer. Three things that a farmer is supposed to do. A farmer's job is to take care of the soil, the souls. Everything that grows or grazes helps do that, but they're not the job. Growing more people, having more programs, doing more stuff, you yourself getting more books, getting, you know, insights, great, wonderful times away, wonderful experiences, those are wonderful, those are great, but they're only means to the soul, which is the most important thing. The soul of yourself, your family, and everyone in here. Caring for the soul is the job. Weeds are going to have their purpose. Conflict, your own personal internal conflicts, struggles, as Paul had, things that will erupt in the family, as they all do for all of us, and things that happen in the congregation. Weeds that are going to drive you to your knees, that you might look to Christ for his grace and mercy and power. Take care of the soil and know that soil. Know what was planted where and when. You and I did a little thing a couple weeks ago called a waymarker, and you've got it posted in your office. Just telling you about your history, what was planted where and when. Just a reminder, there's a great history in this place right here. Know the history, learn the history, know what crops were rotated when and where. And that means just get to know yourself and get to know them. Take the time. And finally, take the time to walk your farm. Take the time to be with people. Check the fence line. Check the pond depth. Check your outbuildings. Those are just, check out your people. Spend time with them, listening to their stories. Pray with them. Love on them. Do you have ears to hear, my friend? Do you have ears to hear, congregation? If you have ears to hear, take some time to re-examine, to study, dig into the Word, but meditate on the Word. Focus on the Word and what it has to say in those deeper places of your life. If you have ears to hear, know that there's always more than what's just on the surface. Amen. I want to call forward the commission to